got next? This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and J.D. Bunkus.
Welcome to Free Association. This is Sportsnet's weekly NBA podcast. I'm Dave Zarum. Joining me, as always, is J.D. Bunkus.
What up?
Listen, if you've been enjoying the show so far, do us a favor, tell a friend. That's the only way this thing's going to stay afloat. It's the only way we're going to grow. And remember to hit that subscribe button on iTunes while you're there. And leave a nice comment while you're at it. If you'd rather leave a not-so-nice comment, then, well, let's just say some things are better left unsaid.
I think that's all I tell my friends lately. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Do you subscribe? Do you subscribe to the podcast?
Good. That's the message we want to get out there. So if you're listening, subscribe and tell your friends.
You've definitely heard this from me. You watch Pacquiao Mayweather?
I did, yeah, of course. I can't miss a big event.
What'd you think? Yeah, I know. I'm kind of the same way. I'm a sucker for boxing still.
I enjoyed it. I don't know what everyone's complaint was. Clearly, they haven't seen Floyd fight before. And I thought Pacquiao made a go of it in the middle. You know, it was a little anticlimactic at the end, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was pretty much the exact same take I had. It was like, I don't understand why people thought after a career of no slugfests that he was going to get in there and do it. The only thing that the one gripe I really had with the entire thing, though, was how we've got Beyonce Knowles sitting ringside.
I don't think you need to use her last name anymore.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Sorry. Yeah, it's true. Everyone's like, oh, which Beyonce are you talking about? I just think it's kind of funny that, you know, you've got these a female pop star that's made an entire career out of being like, singing about independent women and, you know, be a strong woman. And then it's like you're sitting ringside at a Mayweather fight, I think supporting him. So I don't know. I thought that was a little weird anyways.
Yes, hypocrisy. It's quite a thing. All right. Well, like Saturday's big fight, we've got a huge show for you today. Yes, the Raptors are dead and gone, but that doesn't mean there isn't plenty to talk about in the world of basketball. For instance, we have four playoff series to dive into, as well as actually some news from the Toronto Raptors that we just couldn't resist getting to. We'll also be joined in studio by Sportsnet Magazine's Gare Joyce, who has a big story out on Thon Maker.
Great story. It was a really good read.
The much-hyped and heavily recruited 7-footer from Sudan, currently playing his high school basketball just outside of Toronto. So we'll talk to Gare about that. Later on, very excited. I don't know about you, JD. I'm pumped about this. We're going to be speaking with Jimmy Goldstein.
How could I not be?
Yeah, Jimmy's one of the ultimate that guy. You know, he's that guy, one of those guys in sports.
Very interesting dude.
A real eccentric who's known as the NBA's biggest super fan, so that'll be cool. Plus, former Raptors and NBA vet Mike James will be weighing in on the ageless Tim Duncan in this week's James World.
And, of course, himself a little bit, too.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
But, hey, what's a James World without some James?
That is James World. That's the whole shtick.
All right, so plenty to talk about indeed. But first, let's just get this out of the way. Since we last spoke, Masai Ujiri held his season-ending press conference in which he basically said nothing. He didn't fire Casey that day. That might be the biggest news that came out of it. But one other bit of news was that he said that a D-League team purchase had been approved.
Yep.
And that's since been confirmed. It doesn't mean we'll see a team next year. But, you know, it's a step in the right direction. When we had Masai on our show a month ago at this point, I think, he had mentioned, you know, as he said before, how important it is for him to get a D-League team for this franchise. So it looks like the wheels have started rolling on that front.
Yeah, the Raptors are pushing hard for it. And I've been on record saying this before. I really don't think Bruno Caboclo has any chance at developing without Toronto having their own D-League team, not sending him to the Mad Ants where he's going to sit on the bench or he's going to get buried behind of other veterans, somewhere where he's actually going to get meaningful playing time. If this project is going to work and this can work from Bebe and all the rest, the D-League team is so important to Toronto, especially with a GM like Masai Ujiri, who has a background in basketball without borders and has played in Europe and really understands the international game. To be able to cultivate prospects and keep a watchful eye over them, even though the D-League still is a very, you know, ball-dominant, guard-heavy league, I still think the benefit of having your own team is going to be astronomical for
but
the
Raptors. But Biggs can develop in the D-League. What's his name?
Hassan Whiteside?
Whiteside, yeah.
Yeah, I
that's an example. But like the clock, you're right. Like the clock is taking it as far as Bruno's concerned, because I don't know if this is going to be something that is actually realized within the next 2 years.
Yeah,
you know?
And at that point, it's long term. It's still very long term. But again, the game in-game experience, I think, outweighs just about everything. And for a guy who's played nothing.
Sometime this summer, I want to spend a whole episode on Bruno and his development because there's a lot to talk about there. But for now, let's move on to the actual playoffs because, like I said, real basketball is being played right now. And some pretty good basketball, actually. There's four series going on right now. We've seen a little bit of from all of them. So, JD, let's just run through each series. I want to know, you know, what you think about, you know, the players you're watching, storylines you're keeping an eye on, and your take on the action going down.
Yeah, let's do it.
What a pass! T finished off with the end one for Damari Carroll.
Mike, that is prime time. That was a prime time pass.
Must stop for Atlanta. Shot clock at three. The lob to Gortat. And the Washington Wizards, with a great second half on the defensive end, led by John Wall's 13 assists, 2 turnover game.
So Wizards Hawks, that's one series that, first of all, Washington has a 1-0 lead right now. They play tonight. We're taping this on a Tuesday, as always. I got to say, I can't think of a weaker one seed, and I'm not just saying that because the Wizards won that first game.
Okay.
But I don't know, like, Atlanta, they probably will win the series. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened at all. But I really like what the Wizards have done here, and would not be surprised, would not be shocked in any way to see the Hawks go down here.
No, shocked is a stretch for sure. I think, though, that I don't really understand why everybody's so down on the Hawks. I mean, they went 6 with Brooklyn, but they took care of business in that.
Because it was Brooklyn.
Yeah, but Brooklyn presented some really big matchup problems. And, like, if you followed them at all during down the stretch, the Nets, that is, Brooke Lopez was playing out of his freaking mind. Like, and how do you stop a guy like that? And, you know, they got a vintage game out of Deron Williams. Like, it took a lot of things to fall Brooklyn's way for them to hang with the Hawks. And I just think that, you know, this, sure, what you said, I think, is totally valid in terms of, like, the weakness of them being a one seed. Like, generally, the teams that end up in the one seed in the NBA are the biggest title contenders.
Or for the most part, like, when those teams get knocked off, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. It's not like
I feel like if Atlanta gets knocked off in this round, it won't move the needle that much.
Yeah, you look at, like, the NHL playoffs, for example. If a one seed gets knocked off, it's not jarring. Mm-hmm. In the NBA, it is. So to see a one seed go out in the second round, or at least have the feeling of a threat in the first, I think is a little strange. But I don't know. I still like the Hawks to win this series. The Wiz have looked great, and I think that sneakily that's a good sign for Toronto Raptor fans, just a little bit, right?
What, to come to grips with what happened?
Well, no, I just think that, well, part of that, I guess, yeah. But the other side of the coin to me is, so imagine the Wiz revert to their post-All-Star break ways as they play the Hawks. And they just, like, look like that offense that was, like, what, 26th ranked down the stretch. They couldn't get anything
Ball
going.
Central.
Exactly. Otto Porter goes back to his old self. Gortat kind of regresses a little bit. Paul Pierce starts missing shots, actually. Then as a Raptor fan, you're kind of like, ugh, they might have been even worse than we thought, which is something that, I don't know, it was kind of comforting anyway that, you know, the Wizards, for real, they looked good in that first game.
I think they're carrying a ton of momentum from the way they,
definitely,
given the way that they whooped Toronto, you're just seeing that carry over. So we'll see how far that can carry them. But what's up?
I was just going to say, I think that one thing in that first game, though, was people always talk about rest versus rust.
Yeah.
And I think Atlanta gassed down the stretch a little bit. I think that the rest actually benefited Washington. They talked a lot about, you know, coming and having good practices and kind of keeping things together. And that actually paid off. And you look at that second half and the Hawks only shot 25% from the floor. Like, that's brutal. I mean, Washington played solid defense. I'm not trying to take away what they did, but if you look at what they were doing in the first quarter, or first half, totally different. Two other things with that. Damar Carroll, he's going to get paid, right? Like, the
big
playoffs
time.
He's having?
We heard the clip from him, you know, just off the top there. I mean, he's going to be one of the most coveted free agents now because he's going to be at, I think he's going to, like, he will get paid, but compared to other guys, he'll have a reasonable contract. Like, if you're a team looking for a small forward.
Totally.
We talked about it before. For the Raptors, that's a number one target for me.
I think that for this series going forward, he's going to have to sustain the type of play that we've seen in the playoffs so far. His numbers are up across the board. He's shooting 487 from deep and averaging just about 19 points a game so far. So he's been really impressive. I think that if he keeps rolling the way that he has, and the starters need, this group needs to play together more. A lot of people have talked about it after the first game, but only 18 minutes combined that the starters played together in game one for the Hawks.
Well, it's part of that team is their depth. And,
totally.
You know, it took a big hit. I think that whole New York nightclub incident hurt them as well. Like, just mentally seeing if they watch the video of Cephalosha going down and losing a guy like him who was really one of those kind of glue guys That's going to hurt them for sure.
So your keys for them then winning the Hawks?
The Hawks?
Or actually, you like the Wiz? Who do you like in the series? Who do you think advances?
I like Washington to win it.
So what do you think the most important thing for Washington is then going forward?
Just give it to John Wall and get out of his way.
Yeah.
Like he's gonna demolish them.
Oh my God, he's been unreal.
No, for really though, it's what we saw the way they dissected the Raptors, the kind of drive and kick game, which is I think they have the personnel to play it.
Totally.
And they can expose almost any defense. I think the Hawks defense is a little more vulnerable than we thought they'd be.
Totally agree. And that Jeff Teague injury, like you can tell that he's a step slower out there. And the other guy to watch now, of course, is gonna be Brad Beal because man, if he that ankle injury, you saw it, right? It did not look good.
No, and he's got the foot issues.
I think he's going to play through it, but if he doesn't have that explosiveness going to the basket, he's a totally different player.
Okay, so let's go on to Cavs-Bulls.
I don't know about this place, man. I just stayed in my hotel room, man. Every time I look out my window, it's pretty depressing out here, man.
Love this guy.
It's bad.
I know.
It's bad.
So you're not going out?
No. No going out in Cleveland, man. It's all factories.
Do you regret anything that you said about Cleveland?
Not at all. You like it? You think Cleveland's cool? I mean, I never heard anybody say, I'm going to Cleveland on vacation. I mean, what's so good about Cleveland?
It's all factories, man.
What is so good about Cleveland?
Well, they have the Rock Hall.
Oh, that is such
actually, but the Rock Hall is kind of an abomination. I think Stevie Ray Vaughan got inducted this year. I'm going to save that rant for another day. So listen, we saw them play last night. Chicago beat Cleveland. Again, we're taping this on Tuesday, so they played Monday night. Chicago beat Cleveland, and going into this, you know, with Kevin Love out, one of the biggest things to look at was and continues to be how the Chicago bigs are going to be able to exploit the Cavs' depleted front court.
Well, Pau Gasol ran all over them in game one.
Yeah, and I think he's going to do it all series long.
Yeah, they really don't have an answer for him. They broke it down in the TNT half game, but basically when they put Mozgov on him, and they pull Mozgov away from the rim, that's deadly for them. And then there's other times where Mike Miller was on him early, which was even worse. Like, how do you expect Mike Miller to stop Pau Gasol in the paint?
I mean, going forward, and Blatt spoke of it after the game, Cleveland coach David Blatt, he said that, you know, they did recognize how Gasol was killing them, and they did make an adjustment, and it helped towards like the tail end of that game, and it was just too late. So you see, you would assume that they get that implemented from the get-go in game two. So maybe that'll help slow him down a little bit, but I don't know, man.
The one thing I thought was kind of comical, though, was how quickly the narrative changed on this series, right? Like, when the Kevin Love injury first happened...
It's the sports cycle, the 24-hour cycle.
Totally, but when it first happened...
Look,
it was
I just
like,
said the Wizards are going to beat the Hawks, like, yeah, just because of that
true.
One game.
But I just think, you look at it, and it was like, oh, I think Cleveland's going to be... It's going to be tough, you know, they're going to have to battle without him, but they'll be fine without Kevin Love. To, after the first quarter of that game, people being like, oh my God, the Cavs are paper thin, how are they going to do this? They needed Love this whole time. I think the J.R. Smith thing was huge too, right? Like that two-game suspension. I got in an argument with my buddy before the game saying that this was the most important game of the series, and he... You know, you can make that case pretty much every game of the series, but I really thought it was important for the Bulls to go out and steal at least one of these games while J.R. was out.
Wait, you're talking about game one or the upcoming game?
Game one, I was saying, was the most important. Okay, now this one becomes... that's why it's a stupid thing. That's why he was killing me for it, is that it's like you can't really say... It can always change the most important series or game of the series.
Well, I think this is going to be the most competitive series that we're going to see this round.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. The one thing that really stuck out to me, though, with no Love and... No J.R. Smith was the again starting Mike Miller. Mike Miller on defense was barbecued, and
he's kind of a liability.
They couldn't hide him. So there was one possession. He got stuck on Pau, and Pau killed him on the low block. And I just want to say that with Mike Dunleavy, he started things off super hot. He was 3 of 3 for 8 points in six and a half minutes against Miller. Then they subbed Miller out, but it was like. Then he finished the first quarter 5 of 5, 13 points. Like, that's what happens when a shooter gets in rhythm and starts getting open looks, and that's the result you're going to get when Mike Miller's out there.
And Dunleavy is a huge part of that team, too, that never quite gets enough due. I mean, when he's in the lineup, that five-man unit, that starting lineup of theirs, it has the best plus-minus of any unit in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is when you take those guys off the court, specifically Dunleavy, Rose, and Butler, and you replace that backcourt with Heinrich and Brooks, they become the worst plus-minus of any team in the playoffs.
Yeah, Heinrich, I think, has taken a little bit of a drop-off.
Yeah.
I was very confident going in with Cleveland, but then watching that game, and I guess, not to be too reactionary, but it really dawned on me I don't understand how Cleveland's going to be able to win this series if LeBron and Kyrie aren't just killing it every single night. Like, you can't take both those guys off the floor at the same time, because then there's nobody on the team that can create their own shot when J.R. Smith is out.
What, you got a problem with Iman Shumpert?
Iman Shumpert, to his credit, was like, I think that his jump shot, like his three-pointer, is actually looking pretty good, but he's a catch-and-shoot guy. He's not really going to create too much for himself.
I was being facetious. You're right, but I expect, you know, going forward, those two guys will each have kind of a signature game in this series.
They have to have more than one if they're going to get by. I think that when it comes to guys who can score on that team right now, and until J.R. Smith comes back, that are the only two. Like, in that game, it was like, so if you take those two out at the same time, where are you getting your secondary scoring from? Like, Dellavedova?
Hell yeah.
Exactly. Like, there's just no, like, Tristan Thompson's great on the offensive glass, but he's not a polished scorer. They don't have an interior big that's got post moves and that's got game. I think it really hampers them. They never led in that game, and it wasn't really surprising to me. Mm-hmm. The one thing that is a little surprising, Joakim Noah, fourth in MVP voting last year.
Not this season.
No, not this season. But I just mean, like, looking at him in that game, you're just like, wow.
But that was one of those cases, too, where he was like a one-man show for a while there.
Totally.
He was doing it all himself.
I
feel like he's got a really different role on this team, but it's working for Chicago. I mean, they have a legitimate chance to advance here.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the next one. Golden State
First
and Memphis.
Playoff matchup between these two teams, and what makes it very interesting, a contrast in styles. Golden State, one of the fastest paces in the league, and Memphis, one of the slowest. Tony Allen with the steal. And Allen ahead of the pack, one of the best defenders in the NBA. He thinks he is the best, and he backs it up. The way alley-oop to Bogut. What a perfect pass from Steph Curry, and all five starters have scored.
Okay, great job offensively for the Warriors, but inexcusable defense for the Memphis Grizzlies.
So Steph Curry's your MVP. We're going to talk about it a little bit later. But that whole Golden State team, I mean, that's a deadly, deadly team. Going against this Memphis Grizzlies team without Mike Conley for at least another game. He might give it a go tonight.
Have you seen his face?
It's great.
It's, well, I mean, in what regard? Because it is...
It's fun to look at.
I just can't believe that he can actually see out of that eye. Like, they're saying...
Well,
like,
he probably can't really. Like,
did you see any of his shots in warm-up?
Yeah, there were some duds.
Yeah, I saw one where he hit the side of the glass, and then he airballed the next one.
So that's why he probably won't play tonight.
I just thought it was kind of weird that he... Well, it's not weird. That's the wrong way. I think that people shouldn't take too much... they shouldn't believe too much in Conley saying that he's going to play in game two. I just don't... His eye is bloodshot,
like,
and nearly
dude,
swollen
it's like,
shut.
It's like Kyle Lowry saying he wasn't hurt at all in the playoffs. Like, you got to take everything these guys say with a grain of salt.
That being said, Mike Conley's one tough dude. He was already playing through that foot injury. Mm-hmm. They had shown things on it about how
he
picked
up his foot.
I'm
sure he wants to play. I'm sure he'll make a go of it. he's probably not quite ready, and that's going to really hurt Memphis' chances. But even with him in the lineup, I mean, Golden State looks like a finals lock to me. With San Antonio out of the playoffs now, I can't see another team coming even close to giving these guys a run for their money.
I can see the Clippers doing it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I could see the Clippers.
Like, just because they can match the offense if they're hot?
Yeah, I just think that Chris Paul and Blake Griffin as a 1-2 punch is just as good as the Klay Thompson, Steph Curry 1-2 punch.
So the guy, we heard in the clip, it's a mismatch of styles, clash
of styles.
Totally,
that's the story, right?
But one style, I think, is really just going to dominate the other. I mean, the Memphis slow it down game, it just doesn't work because Golden State is so improved on defense this year. That they can kind of do, they can flash a little bit of everything, yet rely on their high octane offense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, the Grizzlies want.
I'm pretty sure
they play the grindhouse. No, I agree with that though. They call themselves the grindhouse. They love that grit and grind style of play, set up in the half court on both ends, and slow the pace of the game down. They have one of the slowest paces. The Warriors have a historically great pace. I just think that they can't do it without Mike Conley. Like, that's the entire story of the series. Yes, I don't think that they would win.
They can't do it with Mike Conley.
But the thing is that I think that they would have a chance. That Mike Conley does so much for that freaking team. He's, we've gone over this and over this, and it is very, it's so redundant at this point calling Mike Conley underrated. Everybody seems to know it, but I don't think people really appreciate how great of an on-ball defender he is. He's one of the best defensive point guards in the entire NBA. And when you talk about having to slow down a team that has Steph Curry, you need that guy. Like, he's the guy, he's going to make him work.
He's also a great model for for teams drafting young guys who don't get immediate results. Yep. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you just look at his progression over the entire arc of his career, so like we talked about Bruno. Bruno's not a great example for that, but you think of like a, I don't know, like a Shabazz Napier kind of guy. Like, in some instances, you need to give a guy 3, 4, 5 years to see how much they can improve year to year, and he's just gotten better and better and better. I'm talking about Conley.
It's hard to believe that when he first came out of college that he wasn't even believed to be the top prospect in his own school.
Yeah, well, because he wasn't.
He was not
Greg
even close.
Oden, man.
Yeah. the man, Greg Oden. I just think the key for me to this series is that they have to find a way to slow them down on defense. I don't see how it happens. In that first game, the Warriors shot half of their threes uncontested. That's unacceptable. They can't do it without Mike Conley. I think Tony Allen needs to switch out and start
so,
guarding.
Let me make this
Curry.
Easy for you. Sorry. So who do you got?
Oh, I think it's going to be Warriors in five.
Yeah, I'll go Warriors for the sweep. All right, let's move on to the next one. Clippers Rockets.
Biggioni, 2-on-1. It's open! Dropping the sledgehammer. Timeout Clippers. Rejected by Jordan on the shot by Harden inside. The crowd very quiet. Four blocks by Jordan. Crawford, corner three. Good! Timeout Houston.
What a terrible game one, but I'm still excited for this series. Fair or not after that first game?
Because it was close heading into the fourth, that's the only reason to be excited for this one, I think.
It was a train wreck of a basketball
also,
game.
You know, there are a lot of characters on both sides. I mean, there's enough to watch there. I just think it's going to be a bit of a
Did you catch the last couple minutes?
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm not sure what happened there.
Yeah, me neither.
Love open gym, though.
Yeah,
love
man, open gym. Isaiah Thomas, like we got some, he was part of the franchise when it first started off.
Yeah, listen, not to call out any names, but if you're going to broadcast a playoff game and it's close, please just show us the end.
And please
leave it at that.
Please at least let people know that there's technical difficulties going on or anything. Keep us a little updated. No, that wasn't that fair. Okay. Anyway, moving on from that. I still think that this series will be fun.
Yeah, you said that. I think it's just going to be like a foul fest, a ton of whistles. That game felt like a football game. Like it was like 4 hours. Or a baseball game, rather.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just like, it's going to be like that every game. It's just going to be based on the whistles and guys interacting and complaining to refs. The bright side is we get to watch more Blake Griffin, and he's really, really, really developing into something that I guess this is what people thought he could be when he was drafted first overall, but I think when you add the kind of multifaceted aspect of his game, when he's now including the passing, I think he had 2 straight triple-doubles, I believe.
Yeah, and Doc
so
Rivers.
That changes his progression completely. I mean, if Griffin's passing like that, if he's having that outside shot work for him, this guy is unstoppable.
Yeah, I every single time I watch the Clippers, it amazes me what a great transition player he is. He can handle the ball. He rim runs. He's incredible. And Doc Rivers, after the game, he was asked about Blake's play, and he said that when CP3's out, he's our point guard. He told all the other guards to defer, to let him be the facilitator, and that he actually got mad at him because too much.
Look at the alternatives. It's what's his name? Lester Hudson?
Oh, hey, Lester Hudson. Interesting fact I found out last night. First D1 NCAA men's player to record a quadruple-double, 25 points, 12 rebounds, 10 assists, 10 steals versus Central Baptist College.
Wow, I take it all back.
Yeah, I know.
Perfect replacement for Chris Paul.
Yeah, no
problem.
Really rough.
And then Austin Rivers is your other option, unless you want to put Jamal Crawford there.
Who is, like, at some points just laughable, right?
So, but you know, they got the win with Chris Paul out last night. We expect him back in the next game or two, maybe.
Do you not sit him, though, another game after stealing that first one?
Well, yeah, but the one thing is that the Houston played so poorly.
Oh, but both teams were so sloppy.
I don't think you can look at that game and really learn much going forward.
Most combined turnovers in a playoff game so far that we've seen.
It was
awful. Some of the passes, like, the one thing that drove me nuts about the Rockets this game was that they just totally looked unprepared. And you're playing a team that just played an emotional game 7 that's without their star point guard. And then for James Harden to play the way that he did, for Josh Smith, as much as people were like giving Josh Smith credit for turning his career around when he went to Houston, he was awful last night. Yeah. His shot selection still continues to baffle
his
me.
His habits are still there.
Oh, some of his entry passes were just so sloppy and lazy. Look at some of the things that were picked off, some of the turnovers. Josh Smith and James Harden, if those two guys don't pick up their game, this one's going to be a quick series.
Who you got?
I gotta say the Clippers. I really like what they're doing right now. I think that, like I said, Chris Paul, when he's I'm crazy about Chris Paul. I think that if he can be healthy, that's the real key, is can he come back and will that hamstring hold up? But if they do, I see Clippers in six.
I'll go Clippers in five. I really want to see that Clippers Golden State series next
round.
Cool story,
Glenn. Let's see it.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, listen, coming up, we mentioned at the top, so he's got the hype and he's certainly got the YouTube hits, but it's Thon Maker, the 7-foot Sudanese center playing out of Orangeville Prep just outside of Toronto. Is he the real deal? We'll chat with Garrett Joyce. That's coming up right now. This is Free Association.
My story is mostly about how highlight reel players are one thing and players are another. And Thon can do amazing things, but he struggles to do some of the things that you would expect someone with his physical gifts to do. His feel for the game doesn't really impress you. It's not there.
Were you expecting it to be there when you went out to see him?
You just look at the, well, if you base it, you watch him in practice and you think, okay, it'll be there. Mm-hmm. You watch the highlight reels, you think, my God, this guy could move directly to the NBA.
Yeah.
But he is, in a sense, one of those big men who, seeking respect, wants to be able to play like a small man and take threes and move out to the perimeter. And which looks great sometimes on a mixtape, but in the game, I would see in Paducah, he was being pushed out to the perimeter by guys at 6'6", mm-hmm. 6'7", maybe not even that big. They would be physical with him, and he just had no response except to yield ground. And if you're doing that against prep players, against 16-year-olds, the idea that you're going to have success against NC2A juniors and seniors, I wish you a lot of luck. It's not going to happen.
And that's probably going to be a big deciding factor for him in terms of when he feels he's ready to go to make that jump to college, right? Or does he think he's good to go?
He's a raw athlete. Yeah. I think that in the right situation, the right coaching, like, his game can take off. Like, he physically has the goods. Mm-hmm. I think he needs someone to tell him what type of player he should be, what he should do on the court. He needs direction. And in a sense, I respect what they're doing at Orangeville Prep. I have all kinds of time for their coaches. Mm-hmm. They've done a fantastic job with Jamal Murray and Jalen Poyser and others. But I don't know that Thon came together as a player. I think he filled out a bit, and mm-hmm. I have no doubt that they do fantastic work in terms of conditioning a player to be ready for that jump. But, in terms of skill set and court awareness and game instincts, I don't know that Thon made any sort of advance with them this year.
Well, because it's a huge get for them from a recruitment standpoint because of, all the attention, like international attention they're getting as a result of it. But yeah, you got to wonder how many players like Thon Maker, those coaches have had experience developing. So it's probably a learning experience for them as well.
Absolutely. And I don't want to bury Thon at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's being recruited by Kentucky. He and his brother Mature are being recruited by Indiana. Bill Self is, came up to the school during the year to watch them play and practice. He has tools and certainly has physical gifts, and he can run the floor like nobody's business for a 17 turning 18-year-old, 7'1" and 215 pounds. Mm-hmm. He might have been under 200 when he first came to Orangeville this year. There's all kinds of clay for a good coach to work with. Yeah. But right now, that clay hasn't taken a shape that suggests that he can step in and have impact as a freshman. I think just by pure athleticism, with some direction, mm-hmm. he'll be able to defend his position. You know,
you're talking about at the college level.
At the college level, yes.
Is it too early to talk past that?
Yeah, I think he can make that transition pretty readily. In terms of the skill set and awareness to have an impact offensively at the next level, I don't really see it right now. Mm. He struggled mightily at the Nike Hoop Summit, and that is a group of players entirely making the step to Division One and having an impact next year.
Yeah.
You know, Ben Simmons from Monteverde and going to LSU. I mean, a sensational player. There were D1 top school recruits up and down. And by the fourth quarter, Thon wasn't playing at all. He started, had no impact, might have gone like 1 for 7 or something like that. Foul trouble, just pushed out right out to the 3-point line. Like he struggled mightily.
Yeah.
So you know, if that's any sort of measure, you know, again, it gets down to the difference. You look at the mixtapes and you think this guy's going to be in the running for College Player of the Year next year. And those mixtapes have created such an unrealistic expectation for what he can do now. Not what he can do in the long term. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, in the long term, I remember watching Olajuwon as a freshman, and he was a raw talent. He was an effective mm-hmm. player, but he was raw. You know, his game evolved immensely. And, putting Thon in the same sentence with Olajuwon's probably, again, hoisting expectations
just
too high.
Bit.
But you know, big men do grow their games, even mm-hmm. when they stop growing higher.
Yeah, it's well said. So the story is called Fast Break.
Yes.
It's in Sportsnet magazine, which is available now. It's on sportsnet.ca. It's everywhere. Search Gare Joyce, Thon Maker.
Just search my stories. Don't search me.
You don't know what you're going to uncover.
Don't
there.
Trust me.
Somebody help me. I gotta eat. Somebody help me to stand on my feet. I want you back again. Oh, oh, oh. I want you back again.
This is Free Association. I'm Dave Zarum. He's JD Bunkus. Remember to tell your friends. Remember to hit that subscribe button on iTunes.
If they don't, they're not your real friends.
It's a great litmus test.
That was interesting. I love the Thon Maker story. I think it's really neat that, like you brought up in the interview, very big coup for the Orangeville Athlete Institute to
definitely,
get him there.
Definitely.
We'll
but not to overshadow from the other guys they have, because they also have Jamal Murray, the point guard.
Yeah,
who,
he's actually the guy, I mean, if you're not the most excited about him.
He's a big part of Gare's story as well, so make sure you check that out.
Yeah, he has been absolutely lighting up All-Star games right now.
Speaking of lighting it up, you know, we touched on the Clippers already, but we have to talk about the end of that Clippers-Spurs series in the first round.
Oh.
Chris Paul hitting the biggest shot of his career, without doubt.
I'm heartbroken that series is over. Can we just have them play another best-of-7 for who plays the Warriors
you know,
in the final?
I happen to decide these things.
You do?
So,
okay, that's good. Yeah,
the right
that's why I asked you. Yeah, I knew. You're the NBA editor now at Sportsnet, and I think that means you're basically the commissioner now. Is
Essentially.
Essentially, right. Okay, cool. I want to talk more about this. We're going to get Mike James's thoughts on being a veteran and Tim Duncan in a second, but I just want to say there's something so great about Tim Duncan that after this many seasons, after 15 All-Star appearances, 2 MVPs, that over 9,000 playoff minutes, that we're still wanting more from this guy. And we'll talk a little bit more about why we think he should come back or where the Spurs go from here.
Well, yeah, and that's the big question is, does the gang come back for one more round, you know, one more go of it? I think they probably will, you know. I mean, you see the way they played. It's not like they played poorly at all. I mean, Duncan, I'm going to throw this out before we go to Mike James. Duncan led the Spurs during that playoff series. He led his team in steals, blocks, rebounds, and field goal percentage, and he was second in points, second in assists.
Not to mention he had the most minutes of any Spur other than Kawhi Leonard in that series.
It's nuts, and he just turned 39 during that series. Yeah. So Mike James, he's 39. On James World this week, Mike talks about how sticking to his blueprint is going to keep Duncan playing for a while. He also, you know, Mike, I don't know if you know this, JD. He spent last season tearing up the D-League.
I did know this.
Like, he had a triple-double. He was, like, one of the points leaders.
Don't talk to me like I don't know Mike James.
So he was doing that all like Tim Duncan at the tender age of 39. So he talks about how to use age to your advantage.
It's my turn now. And I am absolutely tickled by this.
It's James World with NBA veteran Mike James.
Are you kidding me? Oh, they're going to hit it. So as a veteran, as long as you continue to condition your body the way you conditioned your body in the past, and as long as you continue to keep doing the things that prepare you, why shouldn't you be able to play the game at a high level? And that's Tim Duncan is showing you, I have a blueprint to prepare me. I prepare myself, and now I'm going to show you that I can still play this game at a high level, not because I'm athletic, not because I'm the smartest person, but because I work harder than a lot of people. Oh, man, what do you mean? Every single game I play, I have to prove myself. Can you imagine me playing in the D-League? This is all these young kids that, you know, were McDonald's All-Americans and great high school and college basketball players that are still trying to believe in their dreams and believe that they are that close to being in the NBA. So they play in the developmental league. And here is this old guy that they probably grew up watching. So they looking at me like, I'll be dang if I let this old fart take advantage of me tonight and be able to get a roster spot before me. So I'm definitely going to expose this old player right now. So every time I step on the court, there's always going to be a young guard trying to expose me until the third quarter when he realized, like, man, he's just as fast as me. His stamina is just as good as me. He's just as strong as me. Okay, now the only thing that separates us now is our IQ and the understanding of the game, and that's where I beat them, because I'm going to take away your speed and I'm going to take away your athleticism, so you can't use that against me. Like, I'm going to be 40 years old in June, and the motivation and the funny thing is it almost makes me laugh, because yeah. I say to myself, I'm 40 years old, and this young 21-year-old in front of me has nothing. He cannot do absolutely nothing with me, and I am absolutely tickled by this right now. When I was that young, I can remember playing against, when I was 26, 27, 28, playing against, you know, Nick Van Exels mm-hmm. and the Sam Cassells, these guys, and I'm basically saying, it's my turn now. You guys are out of here. Like, you're old now. Like, you can't play on the same level as me, but I'm not going to talk it. I'm going to show you. And for years, they used to show me that I wasn't ready. But every single time I stepped on the court with them, it was almost like a cockiness about myself, for the simple fact I thought that I would outplay them, not because I was better than them, but because I felt like I was they were too old and I was the perfect age. And now, you know, the tables have turned.
Stuff for Mike James, as always. Love that dude.
He's the best.
The one thing that really stuck out to me that he said there, though, which is that, you know, as long as you keep conditioning your body and taking care of your body, and usually with big men, the sustainability just really isn't there. And I think that with Duncan, a lot of the credit has to go to his relationship with Popovich and the way that Pop managed his minutes over his career. It was always something where there was a long-term goal and focus with them. He never burnt him out. He never overplayed him. And then you get situations like as we set up in this break where you can rely on him in the playoffs in the first round to play that many minutes and know that he's going to be all right.
And that's kind of the MO of the whole operation in San Antonio, is that kind of singular focus on the big goal and doing whatever it's going to take to accomplish that. So if it means sitting Duncan out during the second game of a back-to-back,
yep,
or if it means playing him 20 minutes a night for a while because you have that one goal, that's all that matters.
Hey, Pop does not care what fans paid what tickets to see Tim Duncan play.
Yeah, I mean, did you hear?
Never been about that.
I think we'll probably touch on it a little later, but did you hear about what he said about the whole Hack-a-Shaq thing?
No.
He said basically,
make your free throws?
No, he was giving the pro and con for it. The pro being,
I think I read somewhere.
The pro being, we should be allowed to hack DeAndre Jordan because it's his problem that he can't shoot free throws, not mine. But then he said the second half, he said, I understand the gripe with it because it makes for an awful viewing experience. So like, he's totally aware of what he's doing, but just doesn't care as long as he gets that win. And that's what's great about Duncan, the Spurs, the Pop, the whole situation.
He's not wrong on those things. So first of all, that series was freaking fantastic. It was.
Hold on, real quick before I forget, remind me, we need to get Bruce Bowen on the show to talk about the role of comedy in that locker room.
Can I also just quickly tell you that Bruce Bowen is my least favorite basketball player to ever play the game?
Great. It doesn't matter.
Used to jump under Ray Allen's legs whenever they would play the Sonics. Drove me freaking crazy. Can't stand Bruce Bowen. Who did he kick in the face?
Manu? No.
It was Wally Szczerbiak.
Yes,
he kicked Wally Szczerbiak in the face. What a jerk.
He was a white guy.
What a jerk, Bruce Bowen. You can do that interview on your own. let's get into the Spurs,
I'm
though.
I'm
going
to hold you to that. Don't complain when it comes out.
Huge decisions after this series for them. I think that
we
just saw an amazing series. This team really still has it. 10 free agents, though.
Is that how many? Wow. 10
free agents.
A lot.
They brought the entire group back after last year, try to repeat. They brought all 14 guys back. Same core. They just now have a ton of decision making to do, and it all centers around Tim Duncan, right?
Yeah, but also like it's interesting too because they're a potential destination for some of the biggest name free agents out there, like a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge, Marcus Gasol, maybe even, and what you do with Duncan and Ginobili and whatnot, that's going to dictate everything that happens, everything that follows.
So that's exactly it, right? I don't think that there's really a situation where they bring back Manu and Tim and still are able, and of course they have to pay Kawhi Leonard the max, although it was smart of them to delay it by a year, but I just don't see how they bring in one of those two guys or both those guys and then are still able to bring in the veteran. I think
the only way they can do it is if they then traded one of their existing
somebody else
contracts.
Exactly,
like I think they still have Diaw on the books for five
Diaw,
six
I think
mil.
Is a guy you really try to keep though, man. He just impresses me every single
time. He's great,
his turnaround moves and his shooting, just
it's those mid-level salary guys that you have to get rid of in order to kind of accommodate both those contracts and a decent free agent.
I think Tim and Pop come back. I think Pop had the comment after the game, I have no clue, we're probably coming back, the paycheck is good, you think I'm joking.
No, I don't think he's joking at all.
So I think that they want to come back and they get paid. I just, after what you saw from Tim Duncan, it's just so apparent that he's far from finished. He had more field goals in that series than Manu and Tony Parker combined.
It's unbelievable, it really is.
He was a monster. That's the one thing though, do you think Manu should come back? I think he's done.
I think Manu should do whatever he wants.
Fine. Well, okay. That's okay.
How about that?
All right, Manu's agent. I just mean that he career lows in his scoring, field goal percentage. I'm not crazy about what I saw from Manu in that series. I just think that he's the guy that maybe retires out of the core.
I could also see him though, like coming back for a real bargain basement price.
Yeah,
I can see both those guys taking huge pay cuts for the greater good. I mean, that's what we're talking about. That's how this team operates.
The other thing is that Tony Parker that series killed him, right? He just wasn't the same guy.
He wasn't the same. I don't think he was fully healthy.
He definitely wasn't. Quad, ankle, Achilles is what they say that he had. But you look at his last year's playoffs: 17.4 points per game, 48.6 from the floor, 5 assists a game. This year, 11 points per game, 36 from the floor, 3.5 assists.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Yeah, that was very rough.
But like you said, a litany of kind of lower body injuries. Let's look at the other side of that series at what we saw from Chris Paul. We talked about Blake Griffin already, but Chris Paul, he's out now with that hamstring injury. He played through it during that game 7. But I mean, wow, like that was his moment, wasn't it? Signature moment.
It really is. And it's nice to see it because before that, I think it was his bucket that he got the buzzer beater against Tony Allen in the playoffs from a year or two ago.
Sure.
And he's always been maligned as this guy that was kind of a jerk of a teammate. And I think that still sticks. But mostly a guy who couldn't continue his great regular season play into the playoffs. And he was always kind of hampered by injuries. But this was just the moment where it felt like everybody got on the same page and started appreciating Chris Paul. I'm not going to say that people weren't respecting him as a player, but he was left out of the top five on 76 out of 130 MVP ballots this season.
This season. Yeah, that shocks me.
That is shocking. That just shows you like that unpopularity plays into this kind of stuff and the whining. And I just, it's unreal to me. For me, he was number three on what I would have put in as my ballot. I would have had James Harden at four. I know it wasn't the most popular opinion, but I liked LeBron at two, Paul at three, Harden at four. And hey, Harden sure helped me out with that decision making last night. But I don't know, Chris Paul, you come into that game. In the series, he shot over 51%. He was a menace on the screen and roll. He took care of the basketball. He's just somebody like, when you talk about floor generals in this game and guys that just calm everything down and are so smart and do it on both ends, he's just everything to me that you want out of your point guard.
Yeah, I mean, you take away the kind of bickering with the ref, which every player does to the extent. It's just he's just really bad with it. But yeah, if I have a son and he's a point guard, I'm showing him tapes of Chris Paul.
Oh,
he just does everything. He just plays the position perfectly. Like the command of the position is as strong as any player at any position.
Yeah, 27 in that sport. Game seven, one leg. Knock off the defending champs, maybe.
So yeah,
the Spurs
I really am surprised to hear that he was left out of so many ballots because
he had a great season.
He had an MVP type of season. One guy who, by the way, is always an MVP on the NBA sidelines is Jimmy Goldstein. You know about Jimmy Goldstein?
Who doesn't know?
What do you know about Jimmy Goldstein?
If you watch the NBA on a regular basis and you don't know who Jimmy Goldstein is, to at least look at him. I don't believe that you watch NBA games.
Now, like I said at the top, he's that guy. He's the guy. He's always got a cowboy hat, the kind of like, I don't know what it is, snake skin.
Always different.
This flashy clothes. This older guy, the white scraggly hair coming out of the hat.
Yep.
Always with a pretty girl by his side.
What a baller.
Baller is the word. So listen, we're going to talk to Jimmy Goldstein. He's going to join us.
Hey, this is Patrick Patterson, and you're listening to Free Association.
David Stern says that our next guest is the largest investor in NBA tickets in the world. And if you don't know him by name, Google it, and you'll know exactly who we're talking about. He's the guy sitting courtside at the highest profile games in the league, a season ticket holder at Staples Center in LA where he lives. But he gets around, too, taking in action from arenas all around the NBA. And needless to say, it ain't exactly hard to pick him out from the crowd. To his friends, he's simply Goldie, but you probably know James Goldstein as the NBA's premier super fan. Jim, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
It's good to hear. So, I mean, it seems like that's not exactly the type of title that one bestows upon themselves. At what point did people start referring to you as the super fan?
Well, I don't care for the term super fan.
Good to know.
I think I'm more multi-dimensional than that, and not just about going to a lot of games. But at any rate, I don't mind it, and I definitely enjoy going around the NBA and trying to see as many playoff games as possible.
We want to get to the fashion and the architecture as well. We want to get to all of it. But first, so, I mean, you've been attending games, pro basketball games, for a long time. I believe it's, you know, when you were 10 years old, living in Milwaukee, you first started. Would that have been the Bucks or the Hawks at that point?
It was the Hawks, the team that then moved to St. Louis and then Atlanta.
Did you get to see Bob Pettit before you made the move? I think he was there for 1 year.
Bob Pettit was a rookie in the last year that the Hawks played in Milwaukee.
Okay.
And that was the year that I worked as the statistician for the Hawks radio announcer.
And he probably kept you pretty busy.
Well, that was when I really got hooked on the NBA. There weren't many people following the NBA in those days, but I knew it was the ultimate sport, the best sport. I was following baseball and football as well at that time, but eventually I dropped out of those two sports and focused on basketball.
Well, you're certainly preaching to the choir in that regard here. So as a basketball fan, I mean, obviously you don't need a lot of incentive to take the opportunity to go and go to all these amazing playoff games, sit courtside and whatnot. But I mean, when you take a step back and you look at it right now, I mean, you're essentially, you're living out a childhood dream these days, right, from that regard?
Well, it's great not only that I get to see all these games, but that I've become so well known around the NBA and that I've gotten to make friends with so many players, coaches, owners, media people, all the way down the line.
We have some pretty interesting guys here in Toronto. That being said, they suffered a pretty frustrating demise this year in the playoffs. You've been to Toronto. You were here last season during the playoff run. What's your impression of Toronto and being here with this crowd? They got a lot of love from American media with the We the North campaign and the Jurassic Park. What was your feeling when you were up here?
Well, it was a quick visit. I was just there for the game and left the next day, but I was very impressed with the city, the way the physical appearance of the city, and I was certainly impressed with the fans. Not only were the fans inside the arena so enthusiastic, but to see the huge crowds of people outside the arena is something that I've never experienced in any other NBA city.
In terms of crowds that you've been to, which city has the best dressed fans, and where does Toronto stack up with them from your observation when you were quickly?
Best dressed fans?
Yeah, best dressed fans. You go to a game, you're like, hey, these people are best dressed. Obviously, no one's up to par with you. Your style, nobody's touching that. My guess would be Miami or LA, but I would think that maybe there's a wild card.
Let's stop right there.
Oh.
LA, I describe LA as a fashion wasteland. No one knows anything about fashion in LA.
Are they all just followers? Trend followers?
No, the people that go to the games wear jeans and t-shirts. Certainly no fashion at the basketball games. I don't really know of any city that's particularly fashionable at the basketball games. I would say New York has the most fashionable people. That's where most of the important models are based and all that. But as far as the basketball games, I haven't noticed any particular style in New York that stands out, nor anywhere else.
Listen, you just mentioned models in New York, and, you know, I've noticed you rarely fly solo to these games, and it's hard not to notice that you're usually accompanied by a bevy of beautiful women. Now, you may have a leg up on the competition because of your ins in the fashion world, but for a regular Joe, like, say, JD over here, what's the secret to getting a supermodel date to a basketball game? Or does he have no chance?
Well, first you have to meet them, but once you've met some models and you suggest going to a basketball game, most of them are pretty enthusiastic about the idea. So that's not too difficult.
You once said that fashion shows in Paris and Milan are like the NBA playoffs. What did you mean by that?
There's a certain buzz in the air prior to a really important fashion show, just the way there's a buzz in the air before an important playoff game. And that's where I see the similarity.
So if you could only see one playoff game in one arena, where are you going?
It changes over the years. I in the past, I would have singled out Utah, Sacramento, even though they were playing in an arena that was a dump. The enthusiasm was really fantastic there. And now I think Golden State is louder than any other place, with the possible exception of Oklahoma, which unfortunately didn't make the playoffs this year.
I know you go to all the games, but you don't cheer for the Lakers. You've been on record saying that you usually cheer for the opposing team. How is that usually received by the fans around there? Because, like, you've got some profile there, and you're always pulling for the opposite team.
Well, there are a few fans that resent it.
Yeah,
but for the most part, the fans sort of enjoy teasing me,
yeah.
And I enjoy teasing them. And what's even more important is that the Laker players, even though they know I'm rooting for the other team, they've been very friendly to me,
yeah.
And really don't mind that because they know that I'm so engrossed with basketball, they take it good-naturedly.
I can relate to that.
There have been a couple of exceptions. I don't think Kobe ever
I could see that.
Accepted that I was rooting for the other team, but most of the players do.
What a shocker on that account. I would have never guessed that of anybody that it would be Kobe that would take it the wrong way. I like it because whenever, like, I'm from out west and I grew up a Mariners and a Blue Jays fan. And whenever I watch a game in Toronto, and it's a Mariners are in the city, I never ever pull for the home team. I always like being the heel guy in the crowd, yucking it up whenever the Mariners score the runs. That's always been kind of my MO. We want to kind of touch back to the fashion thing just a little bit. It's something that you've been involved in your entire life, a passion of yours. We wanted to know, I think that you pretty much only wear clothing from European designers. Mostly, I think it's Milan and Paris, if I'm correct. But regular guys like us, we'd love if you could just impart just a little bit of fashion tip, because you took a crack at the t-shirt and jeans, and I'm wearing the t-shirt and khakis right now, and I could really use a little help. I'm a single guy in a big city, so if there's anything you can help us with,
I can second that. JD needs a lot of help.
I need a lot of help.
Well, I think that if you don't blend in and do something that's in good taste, but at the same time is a little different from everybody else, that you have a better chance with the girls.
I like it. I'll use it.
What's your process like before the game when you're picking out your digs? Because they're obviously super distinct, and for the reasons that you're probably mentioning over there.
My pregame routine? Generally, because I'm on the West Coast, there's some basketball games on television that start around 4 or 4:30 in the afternoon.
Okay.
So I'm watching other basketball games up until the last possible minute when I have to leave for the game. And then I pick up the girl, if I'm taking a girl to the game.
Very nice.
Generally, the girls I take to the games don't live out of the way because the time factor is certainly an issue in getting to the games.
It's got to be between your place and Staples Center.
But once I get to the games, I try to get there during the pregame warm-up, and that's when a lot of the players come over and say hello to me. So it's my way of getting to know the players.
And I'm sure that doesn't hurt with the ladies as well, when they see everyone coming up to greet you.
No, they don't seem to mind too much.
So, listen, we mentioned architecture up at the top, and you've made a huge impact in that world as well. Everyone listening should go to jamesfgoldstein.com, check out the unbelievable pictures of Jim's L.A. mansion.
It's truly
there.
Unreal.
You might recognize it from some films, most notably as Jackie Treehorn's house in The Big Lebowski. You know, when I look at it, I can't help but think of Wilt Chamberlain's mansion, Ursa Major. I know yours was, I believe, designed by Lautner, but do you know if there was any inspiration from that, or if it's just a coincidence that they're in the same kind of mold, and do you see that similarity?
Wilt and I were pretty good friends at one time, and I have been to his house on numerous occasions prior to obtaining and developing my house.
Hmm.
So the similarity was something in my mind, but way before I knew Wilt, while I was growing up in Wisconsin, I was heavily influenced by Frank Lloyd Wright.
Hmm.
who came from Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And I would say that had a bigger impact on me than Wilt's house. Hmm. But Wilt and I think, had similar tastes when it came to architecture.
No question. And again, I really implore everyone to go out and check out pictures of both. Now, I've heard you say that your house, you lived there for 30 years. It's a kind of a never-ending project. What's the next thing on your list in terms of what you want to accomplish?
Right now, I'm finishing up on a complex that was started a number of years ago that's separate from the house. And it's a three-level complex with a tennis court on the roof that has a glass wall so that you can see the entire city of Los Angeles and the ocean from the court.
Wow.
Yeah.
And underneath the court is what I've termed Club James, which is my own nightclub that's now in the finishing stages, although I've been using it now for about a year. And the club is really got the finest quality facilities from the design standpoint, with, again, a view of the whole city, the ultimate sound system, lighting system, LED screen that covers an entire wall. And it's I've always gone to nightclubs my entire life. It's something that's really been a big part of my life. So I always wanted to design and build my own club. And now that I have it, it's very exciting.
That's incredible.
It sounds really impressive. We can't wait to check it out. We'll keep our eye in the mail for the invitation.
Before we let you go, just because you mentioned him and your friendship with him, and it seems like people always have great Wilt Chamberlain stories. Do you have one that you'd like to share with us? I guess you have one. Oh, I like the laugh indicates yes. It's just a matter of what we can share.
Well, I really can't come up with a story on the spur of the moment that
okay.
I can talk about on the radio. But I appreciate the question.
Okay, so the website for everybody is jamesfgoldstein.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at James F. Goldstein. Jim, is there anything that you want to plug here? Any upcoming things people should look out for? Or just keep an eye on you at the basketball games?
No, I just would enjoy showing you my house if you ever come to L.A. So,
well, I'm booking the ticket as we speak.
Me.
Okay, I really appreciate it, James. All the best.
Okay, same to you.
Love and happiness. But wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone. 3 o'clock in the morning.
Some gold from Goldie there. Really?
What else did you expect?
the big highlights I really like. One is you got to give credit to the Raps fans who got a great shout out from him. This guy goes to every single arena in the NBA, and he says that what the Raptors fans have done is unprecedented. And we went to show you how far back he's been an NBA fan. So
yeah,
that was a pretty cool shout out. I love that he continues to rail on L.A.
Yeah, that's an amazing soap plot.
It's so good. It's just like, I love the Kobe thing,
too.
He
hates the way they dress. He hates the way the models look out
there. He doesn't
cheer
for their teams. It's good stuff.
Fantastic.
And lastly, which you picked out, and I kind of steamrolled over, and I take the blame for this, for not looking or not discussing this with him a little bit more, which was, he said that how he determines the models for the game often depends on whether or not they live between his house and the arena.
Yeah.
That is incredible. Are you kidding? Like, hey, so this model's kind of interested in going on a date with you. Well, where does she live? Oh, she lives on the other side of town. Well, that seems a little bit much, don't you think?
Say, hey, baby, I love you, but not nearly as much as I hate this traffic.
Yeah, exactly. What a absolute...
My favorite part of that interview was when you interrupted whatever it was to let everybody know that when the Blue Jays play the Mariners, you're cheering for the Mariners.
Always.
As if Jimmy Goldstein cares or anyone listening cares.
I think that Jimmy Goldstein cares. Listen, he wanted to relate.
He did extend the invite to his house, so
which we will take up. The thing is, though, what do we bring as a gift to Goldstein Manor?
Like his Wilt story, I have ideas, but I can't say it on the air.
I think a good one is: do you ever listen to Jim Gaffigan, stand-up comedian?
Yeah, food-based comedy.
Yeah. Well, he always says that whenever he goes to someone's house, he brings toilet paper. Because you always need toilet paper. So that's a good thing to grift off of.
That's a thoughtful gift.
I might take that. Although, Goldstein, you better get it right, because otherwise he might slap you in the face with that. You want to play a little catch and shoot before we wrap this thing up?
I think that's a good idea.
Don't hesitate. Just catch and shoot.
The Hack-A-Shack strategy continues to make headlines into the second round.
James Harden is talking to Doc Rivers now about the hacker rule. You know, he's talking to Chris Paul about it. Saying, okay, you guys going to do this? I guarantee you at some point in time, we're going to hack a DeAndre. Let's see if you're smiling then, Jordan. And what? And on cue.
Should the NBA implement a rule change for next season?
Absolutely not. I get both sides of the argument. Man, it was boring. Like, you wait a really long time to watch these games when they start getting into these foul-a-thons or whatever you want to call them. But it's part of the game, and I just think that there's a couple of guys in the league that can't shoot free throws, so we're going to change the rules for them? I don't get it.
Yeah, I know. The only reason you would is because, like you're saying, it just extends the game really long for all the wrong reasons. But I'm with Pop. I mean, if you can't make free throws, it's your problem.
Chandler Parsons took a shot at the Rockets on Twitter after their Game 1 loss. Fair or foul?
Foul? Are you kidding me? This guy just got bounced in the first round.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely absurd that he would put himself out there like that. Like, Chandler, first of all, you had a pretty bad season by all accounts. Then you got bounced by your former team. You get injured. And now you're going to take to Twitter and talk a little trash? Yeah. Just tuck the phone away, pal.
I think we're on the same page with that. What's next?
Likely nothing matches the Spurs clips.
Green on Paul. And God, he got it! 1 second left! Clippers by two!
Which second round series will be the most entertaining?
I'm going to go with Cavs-Bulls just because I think, you know, there's a lot of characters there. It won't be the prettiest basketball, but that's the one I got my own.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. At first, I was kind of looking forward to most of the Clips and Rockets just because they had two of the guys that I thought were in the MVP balloting. But no, you look at what's going to happen in the Cavs-Bulls. It's going to determine, I think, who comes out of the East. A lot of star power there, too. It's going to be tight games all the way down the stretch. So, yeah, that's the one that has the most meat for me.
So you mentioned MVP real quick there. We heard yesterday on Monday officially announced that Steph Curry is your MVP for the 2014-15 season. Do you got any problems with that? I mean, we talked
absolutely
about this
not.
Before.
You got 100 out of 130 votes. We both agreed on it unanimously. Like, there's like who? He's the best player on the best team, and the team was like historically good.
It makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's not even worth rehashing the arguments for the other guys. Steph Curry. It was his year. When we look back in history, the books will now show that this was Steph Curry's year. And I'm down with that.
Yeah, you're one of only 10 teams in history to win 67 games or more, and then Curry, the only other guard other than Magic Johnson, to lead a 65-team win in scoring. Lock it up.
But hey, did you see the press conference?
Yeah, the press conference was good. I just thought, tough year to be the MVP in terms of speech. You're following the Kevin Durant year with his mom, you're the real MVP. I thought that was a little rough. And are we now all going to be doing the single out every single player on the team? Because that gets a little awkward at certain points. And, you know, like how Steph saved the two D-League guys for the very end. He's like, I'm going to lump you two into the same. this is awkward. Just single out the top couple of guys, your buddies.
I don't think anything good comes from most press conferences in general, but sure. I'm okay with that trend.
And as a radio guy, we call them media conferences.
Whatever. Yeah. So good for you. So listen, before we go, there was actually one moment from that press conference. I'm now going to completely backpedal here.
We love
that was great. Yeah, Draymond Green. If you didn't
being
hear
Draymond
it,
Green.
Yeah, Draymond being Draymond. All right, this has been a blast, everyone. It's Free Association. I'm Dave Zarum. He's JD Bunkus. Take it away, Draymond.
You know, watching since my rookie year, you know, the way you've grown and how, you know, everybody's taking notice, like, you know, all these endorsements you get and stuff. Like, you're about to get a lot more now. It's crazy. But, you know, Luke is like one of my main guys, and I talk to Luke all the time just about his journey with Kobe and, you know, with the Lakers and championship and stuff. And one thing that, you know, one of the answers I got out of Luke is, you know, when Kobe won MVP, they all got watches. And you keep mentioning us like, you know, we're a part of this. So I was just wondering what our gift was. That's all.
That's a great question, Draymond. I warmed you guys up with the PlayStations last week. That wasn't good enough, though. I understand. That gift was to buy me some time until this announcement, and now I can up the level of the gift before we get out of here in June. So don't worry. I don't know what kind of watches they were, but I'll beat that gift.
This is about all of us. I love you, people.